You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the herb. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, May 10th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We got a jam-packed show for you. I'm just back from New Orleans, Louisiana last night. What an amazing city. Can't wait to visit again. Also, I was in Fort Worth, Texas for the North Texas Marijuana March. That's going to be a major part of our show today. We've got highlights of speeches from me, Lori Duckworth, and Sean McAllister coming up in the middle of the program. Also on the show today, it's our Hemp Day Hump Day update. And joining us, Joy Beckerman from the Washington Hemp Industries Association will be speaking about the state's first industrial hemp crop. Yeah, you heard that right. First industrial hemp crop. And then at the end of the first hour, we'll hear from Michael Kravitz on the Veterans Cannabis Group's April conference call. He discussed the ideas of veterans using medical cannabis and how that might affect their gun rights. Then stay tuned in hour two. We got more highlights, more speeches from the North Texas Marijuana March. We've also got the cannabis headline news coming up right after this first break. Of course, we'll tell you all about that great news breaking in the state of Vermont and other states, including Georgia, and an update from Texas we have to tell you about. Love having you here. Thanks for joining us. This is the Marijuana Agenda. I'm Russ Belville. We're back right after this.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House. Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb and licensed by the City of Portland.
It's time for cannabis facts about Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the voice of the industry from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. A bill that would make marijuana legal for adults in Vermont has received final approval from state legislators and is headed to the desk of Governor Phil Scott. If he signs it or allows it to become law without his signature, Vermont would become the first state to make marijuana legal for adults via its legislative body. The House of Representatives voted Wednesday to concur with the version of S-22 that passed last Friday in the Senate. Beginning in July 2018, it would eliminate Vermont's civil penalty for possessing 1 ounce or less of marijuana and remove penalties for possession of up to 2 marijuana plants and up to 4 immature plants. It would also create a study commission to develop legislation to regulate and tax marijuana for adult use. 57% of Vermont voters support allowing adults 21 and older to possess and grow limited amounts of marijuana, according to a statewide survey of 755 registered voters conducted in March by Public Policy Polling. Only 39% are opposed. Georgia Governor Nathan Deal signed into law Tuesday a measure that expands the state's medical marijuana program. Senate Bill 16 makes 6 more conditions eligible for treatment with a limited form of cannabis oil allowed in Georgia: AIDS, Alzheimer's disease, autism, epidermolysis bullosa, peripheral neuropathy, and Tourette's syndrome. It also allows patients in hospice care to possess the oil. The newly signed law is the result of a compromise between legislative chambers that keeps the maximum allowable percentage of THC in the form of cannabis oil to 5%. THC is the component in marijuana that makes people high. State senators originally proposed decreasing the limit to 3%, despite no state public health officials or law enforcement agencies reporting issues with the higher percentage. As of Tuesday, 1,738 patients in Georgia and 354 doctors have registered with the state to use and administer medical marijuana. Marijuana dispensaries may start selling recreational weed within Nevada as soon as July 1st. The state tax board voted Monday, 6 months earlier than previously expected. While Nevadans voted last November in favor of legalizing marijuana, lawmakers aren't expected to draft rules governing the state's recreational weed program until January of 2018. With medical marijuana dispensaries already legally operating across the state, however, the Nevada Tax Commission on Monday voted 6-1 in favor of granting temporary retail licenses to currently existing pot shops. Monday's decision means licensed medical marijuana dispensaries in Nevada can submit applications to the State Department of Taxation starting May 15th, seeking permission to sell their wares to patrons other than patients. Dispensaries deemed to be in good standing with the state are expected to receive the first temporary licenses July 1st, at which point they'll be legally allowed to serve medical and recreational weed customers alike. After gaining the support of most House members last week, a bill legalizing medical marijuana was declared dead Tuesday night by its authors, a Texas Republican and Texas Democrat who vowed to continue working on the issue. Quote, the clock ran out, end quote, Representative Jason Isaac, a Republican of Dripping Springs, told the Texas Observer Tuesday evening. Representative Eddie Lucio III, a Brownsville Democrat who authored House Bill 2107, and Isaac, the bill's first co-author, said they were able to build unheard-of momentum for the bill. More than half of the Texas House signed on to the legislation, but weren't able to beat legislative deadlines. Meanwhile, House Bill 81 will head to the Texas House on Thursday. This statewide decriminalization bill would make possession of an ounce or less of marijuana a $250 civil fine, and there would be no arrest. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is reviewing policy changes set in place by the Obama administration that eliminated harsh punishments for low-level drug crimes and could direct federal prosecutors to again charge drug offenders with crimes carrying the most severe penalties, according to U.S. officials. If new charging instructions are implemented, it would mark the first significant move by the Trump administration to bring back the drug war's toughest practices, methods that had fallen out of favor in recent years as critics pointed to the damaging effects of mass incarceration. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The marijuana agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me for A Sensible Future from Students for Sensible Drug Policy every other Tuesday here on the Marijuana Agenda. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Jack Hare once said that hemp could save the planet. Today, we take a look at the non-drug use of the cannabis plant as fuel, fiber, food, and more. Now, let's restore hemp for victory in this Hemp Day Hump Day Update.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're doing it live today for our Hemp Day Hump Day Update, but I couldn't ask for a better guest to have a live interview with than our next guest, the president of the Washington Hemp Industries Association, Joy Beckerman, joins us by telephone. Hi, Joy.
Hello, Russ. Thank you for everything you do for cannabis and all of its many forms every day.
Oh, well, thank you for calling into the show, because I got a press release from your organization, Washington State Hemp Industries Association, remarking on the event of the first hemp crop, hemp seed planting, first legal hemp seed planting in Washington State. I cleaned off my glasses. I looked at my calendar and it said 2017. I thought you guys legalized in 2012. What's going on there in Washington? Tell us about this event that's happening in a couple weeks.
Thank you so much. Yes, indeed, by initiative and voter of the people, we did legalize the cultivation, distribution, consumption of marijuana in November 2012, but it took us 4 more years to legalize the cultivation and distribution of industrial hemp here in the state, and it wasn't because we didn't have support in our legislature. We actually had unanimous support on both sides of the aisle. Believe it or not, sometimes it's just competing bills that can keep a good idea from becoming law. So we had a Republican in the House and we had a Democrat in the Senate, and they each had hemp bills those years, and that alone kept it from happening. So last year, in the December 2015-2016 session, the WSDA and I and others who are industry leaders decided to get behind the Senate Democrat bill. The Senator Bob Hasegawa, who was the prime sponsor of that bill, was really willing to work with us. And so we made our bill, crafted it so that we would be able to be in compliance with federal law. And that is exactly what we have here. We really feel we're poised for leadership here in the state of Washington in terms of driving the oil seed and fiber industries of industrial hemp, which, of course, are the true $1 trillion industries. The phytocannabinoid market, nutraceutical medical market for industrial hemp-derived phytocannabinoids, of course, is huge. However, we're already seeing it's kind of saturated here in the U.S. right now with U.S.-grown hemp. And if we go straight to phytocannabinoid extraction and just develop those markets, we are really entering a bubbling market right now and not positioning the state of Washington to really lead an agricultural and industrial revolution in the many, many markets of oil seed and fiber, which of course include human and animal consumption, body care, paper, textiles, building materials, biofuel, nanotechnology, the list goes on and on. So we are planting our first legal seeds. Our law was passed in March of last year. It took us a year to draft the rules. We just finalized our rules last month, and our first legal seeds in 90 years will go into the ground in just a couple weeks, right in Moses Lake, Washington.
And you're putting on an event to commemorate that, an educational event?
Yes. I mean, that, of course, you know me well, Russ, and you know that's what makes me the happiest in life is if I am telling the story of hemp in all of its various industries and agronomy and processing and all of those things. And yes, so the Washington Hemp Industries Association, in conjunction with main sponsors Hemp Base International, my company, and Hemp Logic USA, which has is our legal seed dealer. I think they're the only ones that have accomplished that so far in the state of Washington. We will be putting on this event, a full-day event. The Washington State Department of Agriculture will be present at this event. Of course, our industrial hemp coordinator, Emily Feblis from the WSDA, will be speaking all about our research program and our regulations. We'll have Andrea Herman, the global first lady of hemp, U.S. girl who resides in Canada and writes regulation and reviews legislation all over the world and in 20 states. She will be with us. Jeff Kostyuk, who has done the industrial hemp research since 1998 in Canada, since Canada started their legal program there. He's been there from the beginning and has actually had been with the Department of Agriculture in the government of Manitoba since 1985. Before that, he will be speaking. Matt Powers, who is an incredible educator, a well-known permaculture educator from Southern California, he will be present to discuss soil ecology and healing land with him. So it's really a full day. I will be doing two topics as well, of course, federal law and sharing through the strength of cooperation. So it's really just going to be a great day for folks to come together, learn how to farm hemp, the various little things that we need to pay attention to that are unique to hemp. Indeed, of course, there are many that say, I know how you farm hemp. You just put a seed in the ground and you grow. Really, what depth of seed? How far away should those seeds be planted? What kind of nutrients and watering are required? All of those things. So it isn't quite that simple. It sure is if you want to do it in your backyard. But if we're looking at commercial or production agriculture, which is, of course, what we want in terms of really making an agricultural and industrial revolution, we have to maximize yield and do it wisely and understand what those needs are, what the harvesting and drying and storing equipment is, and of course to understand the regulatory and legal framework. It's important to note that in this legislative session, an incredible historical thing happened, and that is that HB 2064 in Washington State passed, and that actually removed industrial hemp from our State Uniform Controlled Substances Act. So a very exciting thing, and the first state to do it, and just a long overdue injustice that has been accomplished in our state by saying and recognizing on the books, industrial hemp does not belong anywhere on any schedule, on any controlled substances list. It is not a public harm factor. There is no scientific or public harm reason for it to be there. Let's remove it. Mm-hmm. Having said that, and we did that. It passed unanimously in both houses, and the governor has signed it. It has become law already. The issue, actually, I shouldn't say that. It'll become law on July 23rd. So right now we're in this netherworld. Having said that, it doesn't do anything to change our existing law, which was passed last year in Senate Bill 6206, and which has been codified in RCW 15.120, the revised Code of Washington 15.120, which requires licensing, much like farming a Dungeness crab in our waters would require a state license from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. life. Of course, a Dungeness crab is not a controlled substance. It never has been. Yet still a license is required to farm it. And it is through our law and the RCW 15120 that gives us all of the many benefits and protections that come with being a federally compliant program. Because I think, as I've discussed with you on other occasions in the recent past, 31 states have legalized some form of industrial hemp legislation, but only 10 have really ever gotten seeds in the ground. And that's due to the oversimplification of industrial hemp, or they just didn't have the guidance from educators or grassroots activists as involved and with their head wrapped around those issues as much as I have, and as much as our own State Department of Ag. And I give them a lot of credit for over these years of hemp bills. They have exponentially increased their own knowledge base and really want to be in partnership with the state of Washington to reintroduce this crop. So when we have a federally compliant program, and there are only a few states that do, ours is definitely one in Washington, we get all the bennies that come with that. So our life is made quite a bit easier. And that is that we get USDA organic certification eligibility, access to USDA. And I am so sorry, we are live. Yeah. I am
the phones
so
are
sorry.
Ringing off the hook for hemp.
That's they okay. are. They absolutely are. And thank you, sir. And so we get the USDA organic certification eligibility. We get you access to USDA NIFA grant funds. NIFA is the National Institute of Food and Agriculture. We get the eligibility for the DEA CSIEA permit for certified seeds. That's the controlled substance import and export permit. That allow certified seeds, which are already in the market right now internationally, in countries, of course, that allow for industrial hemp cultivation, that feed existing markets. And, of course, we won't have our farmers will not have to worry about any type of civil asset forfeiture. We won't have to worry about federal water rights, all of those things. So and so much more. Bank loans, there are certain banks that have within our state that said, hey, since you are compliant with federal law, we can't wait to lend money to build this industry and to reinvigorate the farming industry and give all kinds of new job creation and economic growth and stimulus to the state of Washington. So all of that comes with federal compliance, and that's the type of program that we have here. We're very, very proud of it. There's certainly many ridiculous things in our law and in our regulation that do need to be changed, tweaked, and corrected. And we'll be working on that all summer long and probably be working on it from several years to come until the feds completely deschedule industrial hemp in its entirety. And that's on its way.
Yes, yes. Let's hope so in very short order. So let's make sure our listeners can check out the event if they want to register, get tickets in advance or anything like that. What are some of the online outlets?
I so appreciate that, sir. If you just go to letsfarmhemp.com, that's letsfarmhemp.com. It will take you right to registration. If you're on Facebook searching for events, search How to Farm Hemp. It will pop right up. But that Let's Farm Hemp will get you to it. And what's really neat is that the cost to attend it for this full day, and by the way, we're doing a whole caravan in the middle of the day and going to watch this, the hemp planting demonstration. The WSDA will plant. Then we'll go back to do more education. So it's a full-day event. It's $200, but $125 of that $200 can go toward your farmer or business membership for the Hemp Industries Association, which is our founder, really our national brain trust for industrial hemp, founded in 1994. We have taken the DEA to court in 2003 and 2004, the HIA, and won really the true leaders and a champion of as far as we have gotten with industrial hemp. And certainly our lawsuits in 2003 and 2004 against
this episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from celebstoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
All right, we got some clips from the North Texas Marijuana March. Took place in Fort Worth this past Saturday. I flew down there, joined by Lori Duckworth, my partner here at Delta 9 House and Studios. We've got a couple of three two-minute clips for you from each one of us and Sean McAllister, who'll lead off. He's the executive director of DFW Normal, talking about contacting your reps, followed by me and then Lori.
HB 81, HB 2107, these bills will change the state of Texas forever. And if you're here today, that means you have an opinion on marijuana. And what I want you to do is take 5 minutes during today and Google who represents me. Find out who your state representative is. You're going to Google who represents me, and it'll pull up this weird link page, FYI dot whatever. Put in your full address, not just your zip code, and you're going to get your state house representative. State, not federal. State house representative. And I want you to call their Capitol office. They're not there. Call their Capitol office today and say, hey, my name is Sean McAllister. I'm a constituent in your district. I pay taxes and I vote. I believe that it's time for you to support HB 81 to decriminalize marijuana in Texas. And I also believe it's time for you to support HB 2107 to bring medical marijuana to the state of Texas. Are you with me, Texas?
Yeah!
If you do these things, it will be worth more than posting 1,000 things on the internet that are pro-cannabis. It'll be worth more than buying a t-shirt, becoming a member. It'll be worth more than all of that. You know why? Because all of a sudden your lawmakers will have heard from you, likely many of you, for the first time ever. And they're going to be curious, they're going to be interested, and they're going to want to know that people in their district support marijuana law reform. That's you. Does anybody live in Arlington? Make some noise if you live in Arlington. Mostly in the back. That's weird. If you live in Arlington and your representative is Tony Tenderholt, I want you to call his office today and make doubly damn sure that he knows the people in his district support medical marijuana because he's afraid of some little old ladies not voting him back into office. I got news for you. There's way more cannabis consumers in the city of Arlington than there are little old ladies, Tony Tinderholt. And we're going to vote. We're going to vote for somebody like Jessica Pallett of the Libertarian Party to take your job.
Yeah.
If you don't get with the program, not later, right now. And I want you all to have that exact same attitude about your lawmakers. If they're not supporting this, politely remind them that it doesn't matter what their personal beliefs are. It matters what the beliefs of their constituents are. They represent you, not them. If they're not representing you, you need to get with the program and make sure they understand what's important to you. Are you with me, Texas?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Hello, Texas.
Hello. Yeah.
From Portland, Oregon, where at my house, I can wake up in the morning, drink some coffee, put on some shoes, walk 6 blocks down the road, and buy some weed.
Yeah.
Or buy some concentrates.
Yes.
Legally. Like, I can walk into a store and they check my ID, and I can buy marijuana and walk home with it. And nobody cares. It's beautiful. And guess what? The sky didn't fall. Everything's still working pretty much the same as it used to, except maybe people have a little more of a smile on their face these days.
Yeah.
Don't you think we could do that in Texas? I mean, come on. We're all smoking weed. They know we're smoking weed. They know we know they know we're smoking weed. Let's stop fooling around here and get with the program and just get on to legalization. That's going to take steps. HB 2107, you got to make that step into medical. You're going to have that HB 81, that step into decrim. But man, you take enough steps and you eventually walked a mile. You walked 1,000 miles eventually. And understand that's where we started in Oregon as well. We started with decrim in 1973, started with medical in 1998. Fortunately, you're not going to have to wait 40 years to take all your steps because a lot of people have taken those steps before you and you can just follow their path. And this is the path. Getting active, putting your feet on the ground. Like Sean said, a whole bunch of posts on Facebook don't mean nothing compared to getting your feet in the street and meeting people and changing their minds by sharing your stories.
In 2010, I sued the sheriff of my county, Jackson County, to get my concealed handgun license because, like Russ said, we should be able to have our guns even though we have medical marijuana cards and we're sick. And I won. That pissed him off. We took it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. You can look it up. Winters versus Willis. Well, that made him mad, so he, along with several of the deputy's wives, started a school less than a block from my facility. And for 2 years, they investigated us and trumped up charges. Look it up, Operation Storefront. When they raided us a year later, my husband and I took a plea bargain to get 28 and 29 felonies dropped. They made up the charge, and nobody else in Oregon's ever been convicted of this. But we took it because I didn't want to sit in prison for the rest of my life, and neither did he. The charge was delivery of more than one ounce of cannabis to another medical marijuana card holder for no consideration. In other words, we did it for free. No one will ever be convicted of that crime again. But we got our guns and our ammunition back.
Hell yeah.
Never in the state of Oregon had that been done. It also set the precedence for clubs to be open where people could go and congregate and enjoy their cannabis together. Until most recently when cannabinoids were thrown into the Clean Air Act and they closed once again. We're fighting that right now in our legislature. It's a hard battle in Oregon. Yes, we have dispensaries, but you know how we did it? We all got out there, we got involved. I organized marches just like this in Medford and Jackson County for 6 years, even 2 weeks before they raided our facility. We had our officers, which we show great respect for wherever I go, who helped us too, and they were great. They didn't want to put us in jail. They even said they were sorry when they handcuffed me because the officer that handcuffed me was my friend. He was doing a job.
Great speeches from Sean McAllister and Lori Duckworth. I was also proud to be able to speak there for the fifth year in a row at the North Texas Marijuana March. Get involved with DFW Normal if you're in the Metroplex. Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, and the surrounding areas. They always have something going on, and I'll see you again in the fall. I'm going to be marrying somebody.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association and the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
America's veterans serve their country to preserve, protect, and defend our Constitution. When they return home, their country should honor its promise to provide them with the best medical care. But veterans who seek to treat the mental and physical wounds they received in the military are denied access to medical cannabis, even in the states that have legalized medical use. Learn more from the Veterans Cannabis Group in this episode of Veterans of Compassion.
Every month, the Veterans Cannabis Group holds a conference call that you can join on. You can look up at veteranscannabisgroup.com. And in the April call, our friend Michael Kravitz was a part of the discussion on medical marijuana use by veterans and their gun rights.
We were talking about firearms and medical cannabis, especially, you know, for veterans. So Michael, what was some of the new things that you kind of came across since our last call in regards to this topic?
Okay, so I spoke with one of the attorneys out on the West Coast. That's actually attorney Lee Berger, who successfully fought a case in the Supreme Court of Oregon. But that case was not a case that wound up going to the appeals court. There was yet another case. And but I was able to really get an idea of what is really you know, in the middle of these cases, these are all about, you know, the courts seem to be about issues. You know, that's what my layman's perspective would have been going into the courts. You know, it's about issues. You can go and fight the law, you know, if the law is wrong, or you can present your case, you know, on the issues. And it really isn't about it. It's very, very circumstantial. And the circumstances of the cases that went to the appeals court so far were very interesting to me because they sort of gave up on the notion of whether you could actually use marijuana, you know, possess and use marijuana or, you know, cannabis under state medical marijuana law or otherwise, and possess a firearm. That they pretty much they just haven't even broached that issue. Apparently, what has been at issue in these circumstances has been people that have had the card for a medical marijuana program and then claimed to the court that they had never actually used marijuana, they just got the card, and that the possession of the card itself was implying that they were using medical marijuana and therefore made them ineligible to get a concealed carry license. And I think, you know, this is just me thinking, but this is what these calls are all about, just kind of thinking out loud here. But, you know, if you're using medical marijuana under state law, and you're using it under recommendation from your doctor, and you go to your doctor and you pay them with money and they pay their taxes, and this is all very legal, and then you go and you get cannabis from a dispensary, again, it's following state guidelines, it's also staying within the federal guardrails. You're paying with a credit card, you're taking this stuff home, it's all on the up and up, you ask the police officer for directions, you know, on the way out of the clinic, I mean, whatever, it's legal. You don't feel any threat of arrest whatsoever, but yet then somehow this is illegal enough that it's considered illegal drug use under this act. I just don't buy it. I think that reversing the kind of the notion of standing, again, you know, it's not about the issues. If you go into federal court and you try to fight the law has to have offended you. You have to really, like, face jail or some other imminent real threat from the law. You can't just say that you're afraid of the, you know, the law coming after you if you do what you need to do. It doesn't work that way. But if you go in there and you claim standing based on the fact that you're using medical marijuana and you're using it legally under state law, they would consider in the courts, I'm sure of it, that you had no threat of arrest. You had no standing. There's got to be a way for us to reverse this. It's kind of big think stuff, but I think we're going to have to figure out some kind of legal theory here and follow it.
Michael, it's Sean Kiernan, and I apologize. I don't know who was on the phone besides you. But I wanted
you're
to
on the call. Hey, Sean, you're on the call with everybody, but go ahead, speak up.
Hey, thanks. Wouldn't just apply, when you apply, like in Arizona, I mean, I've had it, you apply, you go to get, buy your gun, you just fill out the questionnaire, the federal backgrounds check. I believe, if I'm not incorrect, it asks you straight up, do you do drugs, have you done drugs, or are you a medical marijuana, at least in Nevada, it does say that. And
the form says, are you addicted to, or habitual user of illegal drugs, and you know, we're kind of thinking this through, but you know, using it under a medical marijuana law, you're under doctor's orders, you're certainly not addicted, and saying that you're using it illegally just doesn't seem to fit, you know what I mean?
No, I agree, but what I'm getting to the point is that the actual part, you can incur the actual part just by buying a gun, disclose you're a medical marijuana holder. That will deny you the right to buy a gun or refuse sale, and that's your aggression, you know, that occurs that allows you to sue.
Well, like I said, so far, I think it was just before you got on the call, but I was running through the cases that have been brought to the court so far, and they've conceded the marijuana issue, essentially, and what they've been talking about are cases where people have gotten a medical marijuana card but actually never even used marijuana. They just had the card. And they were trying to argue that, you know, you can't just deny someone just for basically being, quote-unquote, a medical marijuana patient unless they're actively using marijuana, I guess, is their argument. So what we're going to have to do, I think, with this line of logic that we're talking about is come up with a whole new strategy, a whole new approach, and find a different case to run off of. It's really, you know, a lot more challenging than I had anticipated.
And I got it. We'll talk offline. I think I have a thought, though, but I was a little confused where you're coming from, so I will think it through with you offline.
Yeah, and you know, certainly Sean and I have talked about issues that come up around this as well that we haven't talked about on the conference call yet in previous calls, and that is it is clearly illegal to possess a firearm under certain circumstances that are written in the law elsewhere. In the case of someone who's been released from prison after being serving a felony sentence, right? Is that right, Sean?
Correct. Yes.
Yes.
So. The bigger one for veterans is simply the, you know, any time, depending on what state you're in, 5150 in California, Nevada 2000. You get your gun rights limited when you're involuntarily observed at the VA. legislation. The first time, I think, 5 years, and then the second time, it's life ban from owning a firearm.
Whoa, so that's another issue that we should definitely look into if they're pulling people into that for drug use or for marijuana especially.
No, it's not even that. It's the veteran side, and I know it's cannabis, so we'll move on, but it's something you need to address because 93% of all the list on the federal no-buy list gun registry are vets who have been reported as mentally unstable, and most that all that is basically guys going in and just getting held for 72 hours.
Well, we had a vet in Maine who just really was at wit's end, had gone to the VA, and the whole thing was about marijuana. He had gone in there and talked to him about using marijuana, and that got him in a real face-to-face with these guys. They really started following him around with police and everything, and it devolved. And this vet reacted very harshly to that. It came back armed, and it wound up being a fatality. The police shot him on the campus. And there was yet another case in Maine where a veteran suffered post-traumatic stress. The police showed up at a domestic dispute at his house where in any other circumstance they would have come with, you know, much toned down approach, but they were told that this was a violent veteran, suffered post-traumatic stress. They were all pumped up, and he showed up at the door with a kitchen knife in his hand, and they just blew him away. So I think this is actually something that, you know, cannabis is in there. I mean, cannabis may be two steps back in the chain from where the circumstances hit the road, but I'm willing to take that stretch.
Okay.
Hold on, and Sean, this is Aaron Augustus. How you doing?
How you doing?
Good. You know, something nice that is interesting for me is people that are in the cannabis industry, whether they're growing or what have you, most of the people that are growing up in the hills, those people possess firearms to protect their property. And from my understanding, that's if you're caught with the firearm and you're cultivating or, you know, acting in the crime, so to speak, right, then it's a minimum of 5 years per firearm.
Yeah, no, the story with firearms is interesting because there was that big case in Washington a couple of years ago. It wasn't veteran-related, but state of Washington, they were legal in their grow on the medical side. Within the rules of the state of Washington, but they were still being prosecuted by the feds. And basically what ends up happening is five of the six counts got thrown out, and the father of it died of cancer, so the charges got, but he got found, they ended up spending about a year in jail, but they were under threat of 10 years in jail, and it varies the number of firearms of the offense. But this is what people are saying. Anytime you have a gun, even if it's registered and legal, in your vicinity, is any illegal illicit drug that you have illegally, it becomes a federal offense, and I think the minimum is 10 years, actually, because that's what it was. And they use that, and that's one of the things they hold over a lot of these drug people's heads when they say, okay, we're either going to either plead guilty to X, or we're going to charge you and take you to trial, and you're going to spend up to 10 to 20 years in jail. And then everyone goes, oh, I'll plead and take 6 months in jail. And that's what's going on in our court system in terms of, you know, they're just trying to get these people to plead, and that's what they use. They use those heavy hammers of things like the gun against people. I don't know any of you guys who know N.A. Poe, who got arrested in Philly this weekend. It's going around, and he was a big-time activist with Mike Weider in Philly. He got illegal. He got raided. They had, like, this event going on where they were selling cannabis and raided, and I think there was four guns at the property, all legally registered, including the security guard. But remember, cannabis isn't legal to be sold in Philly, so they may slam them with gun charges, too. So it's a huge issue that comes out of the drug war, where they basically just scared the shit out of middle America about drugs, and middle America accepted every possible harsh punishment that they could throw at them.
In Virginia, there's a law that's based on the amount of weight of the marijuana. And basically what it says is if you possess a illegal drug, Schedule 1 or 2, like cocaine, in any amount and a gun at the same time, possess those two things together, you're guilty of this violating this law. And the marijuana, we worked hard in Virginia to make it not be any amount of marijuana, but it wound up being like 5 pounds of marijuana. But still, 5 pounds of marijuana together with a gun in close proximity in Virginia clicks up state law violation, as well as the federal violation. I think it's worth noting that the federal government doesn't get involved in that many arrests. You know, it's the state that usually does most arrests. The federal government has come up with like a convenient rule of thumb of about 100 plants or more, but they're usually in the thousands of plants and, you know, multiple outlets and big, you know, commercial, you know, buys and things like that. If they get involved in a single person, it's probably pretty political, and they've done that before. They went after our buddy up there, the Prince of Pot up in Vancouver.
Rick Simpson?
No, they went after him politically as well. Yeah, no, I was thinking about Mark Emery, yeah.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
It's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the Alcohol Agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Just say no.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave a state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
This weekend, I flew to Fort Worth, Texas to participate in the 5th North Texas Marijuana March I've had a part of. It coincides with the global cannabis march that we all take part in worldwide. And I'm always impressed by the marijuana activism in Texas. They're led by Executive Director Sean McAllister, and it's the Dallas-Fort Worth chapter of NORML. And they are an exemplar for effective grassroots politics. This organization rebuts every complaint I've ever heard from aspiring activists about being unable to make any progress on marijuana reform because they're living in a red state. Witness what has transpired in the past 5 years in Texas. Where it was once a deep, red, bottomless pit of prohibition, it is now a state that has a medical cannabidiol law. It's got a few cities with either decriminalization or cite and release laws, and now bills for both whole plant medical marijuana and statewide decrim that are beginning to make it out of legislative committees and attract widespread support. And that didn't happen in a vacuum. DFW Normal, along with other Normal chapters in the state, MPP's excellent organization there, patient advocacy organizations, and allied groups like the Libertarian Party of Texas and RAMP, don't forget Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition, founded by Mrs. Ann Lee, the mother of the California Prop 19 proponent Richard Lee. Well, they all put pressure on their elected officials by testifying, lobbying, and educating both the lawmakers and the public. That teamwork is part of what charms me so much about my appearances in the prohibition states. Out on the West Coast, where we've legalized and had medical for 2 decades, the once harmonious marijuana activist community is now fractured among multiple fault lines concerning how do we get rich, or who gets to be medical, and what reforms do we pursue now? But in places like Texas, where both patients and potheads are still one encounter with a county sheriff from possibly losing everything, the community is tight and focused and so ready to support one another. And that teamwork extends beyond just the activist-based as well. DFW Normal has a great supporter in the law office of David Sloan. Yeah, most Normal chapters are well advised to ally with the criminal defense attorneys in the area who specialize in drug crime defense, and there are many of them doing fantastic work. But how many of them have helped outfit their allied Normal chapter with a refitted police car called the Truth Enforcement Vehicle, car number 420, complete with a siren and flashing green lights and Normal logos and pot leaf graphics, and a DFW Normal Suburban, and a DFW Normal van, and Hydro, the DFW Normal speedboat, which powers DFW Normal's wakeboarding team, and a couple of DFW Normal wave runners. And sure, you're thinking, yeah, it's easy to be some big-time Normal chapter if you have some rich lawyer backing you, but the question you should be asking yourself is what that Normal chapter did to attract the support of a rich lawyer. One method of activism DFW Normal pioneered was that any Normal chapter could adopt for very little cost is a highway banner drop. I joined up with Sean and his crew as we made our way Friday to a pedestrian overpass crossing Highway 360, the major north-south artery in Arlington between Dallas and Fort Worth, for one of these banner drops. Honk for Marijuana was one of the 30-foot banners we clipped up on the chain-link fence for the overpass on the southbound lanes, and Honk for Medical Marijuana was the other one on the northbound lanes. We had 2 other banners advertising the Marijuana March for the following Saturday. Literally thousands of Texans driving through that stretch saw the green lights of the Truth Enforcement Vehicle pulled off to the side of the road on the southbound lanes, and as they slowed to read the overpass signs, the honks of encouragement were plentiful. We even spent time with pedestrians crossing the bridge, telling them about the 2 marijuana bills pending in their legislature. Now, a police officer did show up to survey the scene, but aside from asking the Truth Enforcement car to move off to the frontage road, they made no effort to interfere with our First Amendment rights. The Department of Transportation received a few calls from irate drivers upset about the slow traffic, but they also made no effort to stop us. The next day, we gathered in Burnett Park for speakers and bands. Vendors plied their wares, and activists registered new voters. The march itself drew in a few hundred, maybe 1,000 people, chanting and openly smoking marijuana in the streets of Fort Worth, while bicycle police maintained order but did not interfere with the toking. We took over the steps of the county courthouse for more speeches before returning to the park. It's all made possible thanks to years of relationship building between DFW Normal, the police, and the businesses in the activist community. And one of the strongest business supporters of reform in the Metroplex, and full disclosure, the sponsor of my body art, is Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and its owner, Thomas Barrington. I was there Sunday after appearing as Harry J. Anslinger in a video shoot for a producer trying to educate Texans on the history of prohibition. Thomas was inking my latest tattoo, the Delta 9 tetrahydrocannabinol molecule on my left forearm, as he told me about another form of activism he's involved, erasing hate. He said, "I'm committing tattoo suicide," as he was searing my arm with the needle, "by doing this work for free. These guys have these swastikas, Nazi tattoos, Confederate flags on them, but now they've changed their lives. They've got kids now who are asking them, 'Daddy, what's that mean?' So I've been doing cover-up work on them for free, you know?" It's one of the coolest charitable acts I've ever heard of. Thomas lamented, though, I only wish I could get more artists to donate their time to do more of this work. Well, whether it's the physical manifestations of racial hatred inked on skin, or the legal manifestations of racial hatred inked into prohibition, the Texans I've met aren't having it. Mark my words, Texas will shock the nation with its marijuana reforms in the next 5 years. Thanks for joining us here on the Marijuana Agenda. I'm Russ Belville. Those of you listening live, watching on YouTube, stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We got more speeches from the North Texas Marijuana March. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.